Evening, good to see you. Hope you've had a great day. Your week's off to a good start. No better place to be than with the Lord's people coming together around the Lord's word. And we're even going to have opportunity to sing a few songs and pray to our Heavenly Father, Lord willing. And we appreciate the fact that you're here. We're in the book of Numbers tonight. If you'd like to get your Bible and join in our study, an overview of the book of Numbers. Where does the book of Numbers get its name? Any idea? How about from the numbering of the children of Israel that's recorded in the book? How many of those are there? Two of them. First chapter and the 26th chapter. So the book has to do with the numbering of the children of Israel. Numbers chapter 1, in verse 1, the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tabernacle of the congregation on the first day of the second month in the second year, after they were come out of the land of Egypt, saying, take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel. And so you might highlight the sum. The keynote is the word sojourning. Numbers chapter 10, verse 29, Moses said unto Hobab, the son of Reguel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, we are journeying unto the place of which the Lord said, I'll give it you. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good. For the Lord hath spoken good concerning Israel. So if you might highlight that word journeying in Numbers 10, verse 29, and write the word sojourning next to the title of the book, Numbers 10, 29, we are journeying. Two expressions from songs that we sing that express the concept of the book. I'm bound for the promised land. Oh, who will come and go with me? I'm bound for the promised land. Song 193. And then we are bound for Canaan land, tenting by the way. Song 480. The children of Israel were Canaan land bound, tending by the way. Numbers begins where Exodus ends. Covers a time span of nearly 40 years. It's a book of journeyings, giving an account of Israel's wilderness wanderings from Sinai to Moab. Here's a brief outline of the book. From chapter 1:1 through chapter 10, verse 10, you have events at Sinai in preparation for departure. And then from chapter 10:11 through chapter 14, from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea, chapters 15 through 21, from Kadesh to Moab, and then the remainder of the book, chapters 22 through 36, events in the plain of Moab. First chapter records the first numbering when every male from 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war in Israel, were numbered. What was the total of all that were numbered? Jared? 603,500. That's exactly right. From Numbers 1, verse 46. What tribe was not numbered? The Levites. The Lord said not to, didn't he? That's good reason. Numbers 1, 47. But the Levites after the tribe of their fathers were not numbered among them, for the Lord had spoken unto Moses, saying, only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel. Chapter 2 has to do with the encampments of Israel, about the tabernacle. And if you'd like to know more about the encampments, read chapter 2. Also in the supplementary material that was handed out, you had a diagram, if I remember right, of the encampments of the children of Israel about the tabernacle. Chapters 3 through 4 deal with the Levites, give the number, encampments, in charge of the Levites. You'll notice the difference between the numbering of the firstborn and the numbering of the Levites. There's a difference of 273. Question sometimes comes up about the 273 firstborn, more than the Levites. The remaining, you remember, were redeemed for 5 shekels each. And the sum of 1,365 shekels were given to Aaron and his sons. The Levites, of course, assisted the priest in their tabernacle service. The Levites were numbered every male from how old? A month old and upward, chapter 3 and verse 15. All that were numbered were how many? 22,000. Then you have their encampments. Moses and Aaron, his sons, encamped before the tabernacle toward the east. Their charge, they had different divisions of service. How old do you have to be to work in the tabernacle, Richard? 30 years old and upward, even until 50 years old. And how many were numbered of that age? 8,580. In Numbers 4, in connection with the Levites, there was a prohibition stated. What was that prohibition? Not to what, Dad? Numbers 4 and verse 15, they shall not touch any holy thing lest they die. If you don't agree with that, you don't believe that's how it was, just have a little talk with who? With Uzzah about that. And he'll tell you that God meant exactly what he said about that. 2 Samuel chapter 6. Other events at Sinai before their departure include some were to be put out of the camp. Chapter 5, verse 2, it is written, command the children of Israel that they put out of the camp every leper and every one that hath an issue, and whosoever is defiled by the dead. Where would you read about lepers and issues and being defiled by the dead? Anybody have any idea what place you might read to learn about that? Those of you who were here last night, Wednesday night, know exactly where you'd read, wouldn't you? Because Nicholas did a great job covering the book of Leviticus. And much detail given about those matters. And here emphasis is placed on the fact that such were to be put out of the camp. You ought to highlight those words in verse 2. Put out of the camp. Again, verse 3. Both male and female shall you put out without the camp. And verse 4. Put them out without the camp. And the purpose of that was that they defile not their camps in the midst whereof I dwell. That's parallel language to what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5 when there was sin in the camp. Corinth, and he said, put out or put away from among yourselves that wicked person. In chapter 5, verses 5 through 10, there's instruction concerning trespasses against the Lord. Verse 9 says, every offering of all the holy things of the children of Israel, which they shall bring unto the priest, shall be his. And then in the remaining part of chapter 5, from verse 11 through 31, there's what's referred to as the law of jealousies. You might highlight in verse 15, an offering of jealousy. Verse 29, this is the law of jealousies, when a wife goeth aside to another instead of her husband and is defiled, or when the spirit of jealousy cometh upon him, and he be jealous over his wife, and shall set the woman before the Lord, and the priest shall execute upon her all this law. It's known as the law of jealousies. She used to be brought before the priest and would drink bitter water that would cause a curse that resulted in the thigh rotting and the belly swelling. Numbers 21. And if she would be defiled, then water that would cause the curse would enter into her, become bitter, her belly would swell, her thigh would rot, and the woman would be a curse among her people. But if she be not defiled but be clean, then she shall be free and shall conceive seed. It's what's known as the law of jealousies, or the offering of jealousy. Numbers 5, 11 through 31. Then chapter 6, verses 1 through 21, deals with the vow of a what? Nazarite. What's that about, John? Like, okay. No razor upon the head, right? Come at no dead body. It's basically the vow of, give me a word, separation. That's the key word. Verse 2. When either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from. So circle that word, separate. It's a vow of separation. You know of any Nazarites in the Bible? Who? Samson. Samson, vow of a Nazarite. Verse 5, all the days of the vow of his separation. See, verse 4, all the days of his separation. Verse 6, all the days that he separated himself unto the Lord. Verse 8, all the days of his separation, he is holy unto the Lord. That word holy suggests separate, separation, withdrawal. And you have that in the vow of a Nazarite. Then verses 22 through 27, good passage to memorize when you think about the blessing that would be pronounced upon the Lord's people by Aaron and his sons. On this wise ye shall bless the children of Israel. The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I'll bless them. So Aaron and his sons will bless the people of God in the name of the Lord. Chapter 7 of Numbers records offerings of the princes at the dedication of the altar. Chapter 8, first four verses describe the lighting of the lamps. The Lord said, speak unto Aaron and say unto him, when thou lightest the lamps, the seven lamps shall give light over against the candlestick. And Aaron did so. He lighted the lamps thereof over against the candlestick, as the Lord commanded Moses. What a great expression of obedience. It's found a number of times throughout this period when people did so, and Aaron did so. And you could put yourself in his place. If you'd been Aaron, it had been said of you. He did so. I like how the candlestick was made. What stands out about how it was made? Nicholas? Verse 4, I'd highlight that. According unto the pattern. If you'd made it, would it have been said according unto the pattern? Or would you have thought, I don't really care for what the pattern calls for. I like to make it my way. I got to do things my way. I got to put my own spin on it. Make my own mark on it. Leave my impression on it. Some people think they have to do that when it comes to the Lord's word. They can't just do things like the Lord said. They got to put a new spin on it. Make their mark. It is said, according unto the pattern which the Lord has showed Moses, so he made the candlestick. Remember, God said, see that thou make all things according to the pattern. And that's true today. All things need to be according to the divine pattern. We've got people that want to get away from that. They don't like that. Need a new way of doing things. Chapter 8, 5 through 26 deal with the consecration of the Levites. Verse 14 says, thus shalt thou separate the Levites from among the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. That's what that's about. Their consecration, their separation from among the children, being set apart for their service. Chapter 9, first 14 verses, records the second, what? The second Passover observance. Remember the first one? Back in Egypt. It's been a year. You believe that? It's been a year. First one back in Exodus 11, 12, when provision was made for the protection of the Lord's people from the 10th and final plague brought upon the Egyptians, the death of the firstborn. They're to kill the Passover lamb, and they're to take the blood, dip it, apply it to the doorpost, and remain in the house so that the firstborn in that house would be spared. The Lord would see the blood, and he'd pass over. That's how it got its name, the Lord's Passover. The Lord would see the blood, and he'd pass over. And that was made an annual thing. Every year, they'd remember. It was basically a memorial day for the children of Israel to remind them of that night that was to be much observed. And here's the second observance of it in Numbers, the ninth chapter. Verse 2, let the children of Israel also keep the Passover at his appointed season. You might underscore those words, at his appointed season. God has appointed seasons. Or appointed times for things. And we need to respect the Lord's appointed times, don't we? He had appointed times in the Old Testament, lots of those. Nicholas pointed out, didn't you, from the book of Leviticus, days of observance, special times that the Lord had set aside. And he has appointed times today, doesn't he? And those need to be observed. That his appointed season. Can you take the appointed season for the Lord's Supper and move that to another time or season? What's the appointed season for the Lord's Supper observance? First day of the week, Acts 20, verse 7. Let's keep that on Thursday, how about it? Could we do that? Shift it from Sunday, the first day, to Thursday? About Saturday, maybe, just Saturday night, just a few hours. Can't even do that, huh? That is appointed season. But also with this second observance came a new provision. What was the new provision, Richard? Good. Those who were defiled or traveling were permitted to keep it a month later, right? One lesson enforced throughout the book, as highlighted in verses 15 through 23 of chapter 9, is that God's people can only move how? By God's direction. If you write a little lesson to be learned from the book of Numbers, at the heading of Numbers, it would be this lesson right here. It's one of the main lessons of the book, is that God's people can only move by God's direction. Look at this. Numbers 9:15. On the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle. So it was always, the cloud covered it by day, the appearance of fire by night. And when the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle, then after that, the children of Israel journeyed. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the children of Israel were pitched. What made the difference, where they pitched or where they journeyed? Had to do with the Lord's direction, didn't it? Right? At the commandment of the Lord, the children of Israel journeyed. At the commandment of the Lord, they pitched. See that? As long as the cloud abode upon the tabernacle, they rested in their tents. When the cloud tarried long upon the tabernacle many days, and the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and journeyed not. And so it was when the cloud was a few days upon the tabernacle, according to the commandment of the Lord, they abode in their tents, and according to the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. And so it was when the cloud abode from even unto the morning, and that the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they journeyed. Whether it was by day or by night that the cloud was taken up, they journeyed. Or whether it were 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried upon the tabernacle, remaining thereon, the children of Israel abode in their tents and journeyed not. But when it was taken up, they journeyed. At the command of the Lord, they rested in the tents, and at the commandment of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. What's the key expression there? It's found a number of times. At the commandment of the Lord. You got to highlight that. At the commandment of the Lord. When did they move? At the commandment of the Lord. When did they rest? When did they stay? When did they pitch? At the commandment of the Lord. What made the difference? The commandment of the Lord. And that's the lesson we need to learn from the book of Numbers. We can only move at the commandment of the Lord. And we've got a lot of people today in the religious world who need to go back and study the book of Numbers and learn that fundamental principle that we can only move at the commandment of the Lord. Suppose you'd been resting there for about a year. You thought, man, it's time to get going. We need to just, I don't know what's happened to this cloud. I don't think this fire thing is working anymore. Just pack up and let's go. We've been here long enough. Without the command of the Lord, just take off. Will that work? Huh? Or what are we moving for? We just got here. We've just been here 2 days. I haven't hardly had time to get settled in my tent. Get things set up. We're already packing up and moving. You have to learn to respect the commandment of the Lord. When he says it's time to go, it's time to go. When he says it's time to stay, it's time to stay. Right? That puts your trust where? In the Lord. You trust his leading. Right? Where he leads, I'll follow. So there's a lot of good lessons from that, aren't there? Then two trumpets of silver. What are those about? Numbers 10, 1 through 10. Were they to make some trumpets? They were. Make thee two trumpets of silver. Of a whole piece shalt thou make them. and they were used for this purpose, the calling of the assembly and for the journeying of the camps. You can read about that in the first 10 verses, Numbers 10. And then you've got their departure from Sinai from 11 through the end of the chapter. So first 10 chapters up to verse 11 have to do with their time at Sinai before they depart toward Canaan. Of course, Numbers takes them from Sinai to Moab. You leave them in the plain of Moab for a short spell. But all this that we've read about so far, first 10 chapters, are events at Sinai. And so verse 11 of chapter 10 is kind of a pivotal point in the book as they depart from Sinai. When it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year that the cloud was taken up from off the tabernacle of the testimony. If you compare that to Exodus 19 and verse 1, when they came to Sinai, then you'll understand they've been there about a year. And we might remember the words of Moses when in Deuteronomy chapter 1, he made one of the speeches in the plain of Moab. He reminded the children of Israel how the Lord our God spake unto us in Horeb, saying, you have dwelt long enough in this mount. Turn you and take your journey and go to the mount of the Amorites and in all the places nigh thereto, in the plain, in the hills, and in the vale, and in the south, and by the seaside, and the land of the Canaanites, and unto Lebanon, and the great river, the river Euphrates. And so this statement, ye have dwelt long enough in this mount, goes back to this time of their departure from Mount Sinai, from Exodus 19:1 to Numbers 10 and verse 11. Who did Moses invite to go with him? Eric? Hobab. Numbers 10, verse 29. The son of Reguel. Hobab. What did he say to him? We are journeying unto the place of which the Lord said, I'll give it you. Come thou with us, and we will do thee good. For the Lord hath spoken good concerning Israel. Hobab. What went before them to search out a resting place for the ark? The ark. Remember that? Verse 33. The ark of the covenant of the Lord went before them in the 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. In the book of Numbers, you have 7 murmurings or complainings of the children of Israel. 7 occasions where they're murmuring, speaking against God or Moses. Be familiar with those. Numbers 11:1. When the people complained, that make a good little heading for this section. When the people complained, it did a lot of things. One, it displeased the Lord. Complaining displeases the Lord. Second, it kindles the Lord's anger. Third, the Lord hears it. Third, it kindles his anger. And the result of that, the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. It brought his wrath, didn't it? Several things about the Lord's response, reaction, attitude toward complaining. He didn't care for it, did he? Then the second example is in verse 4, when the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again and said, who shall give us flesh to eat? Chapter 14 and verse 2, another example of their murmuring. All the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness? You know, to circle or highlight that word murmured or complained. Chapter 16 and verse 1. Who do you read about here? Korah. The rebellion of Korah. And we'll talk more about that. But they gathered themselves together against Moses, against Aaron, said unto them, ye take too much upon you. Number 16:3. Then chapter 16 again, verse 41. And you read about this again, chapter 17:12. All the congregation of children of Israel, what? Murmured the next day. The next day. They said, you've killed the people of the Lord. These were sympathizers. You know, there's always been people like Korah. We've had some we've had to deal with. They're gainsayers. They contradict the elders, contradict the preachers, contradict the Lord. And then you got sympathizers. You got people sympathize with them. Oh, the poor fella, he's been mistreated. I'm gonna pat him on the back. Oh. That's what these people do. You've killed the people of the Lord. What happened to them? They died in a plague. You know how many died? 14,700. Then chapter 20, verses 2 and 3. And there's no water to drink. The people chode with Moses and said, would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. You don't have to preach very long or serve as an elder very long before you find people in the Lord's family that want to chide with you. Chide with you about this or chide with you about that. Go back and read the book of Numbers, how God felt about chiding. They chode. Numbers 21 and verse 5. People spake against God and against Moses. Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? There's no bread. There's not any water. Our soul loatheth this light bread. Numbers 21 and verse 5. There's seven of them. Seven murmurings or complainings. And remember what Paul said about that? 1 Corinthians 10:10. Neither what? Murmur ye. Don't murmur. Don't what? Don't complain. And some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. One of the main lessons to be learned from the book of Numbers is don't murmur. Don't complain. Quit your complaining. God doesn't like that. He never has. Never has tolerated that among his people. The book of Numbers also demonstrates the severity of God. Paul one time said to the Romans, behold therefore the goodness and severity of God. One of the finest places to behold the severity of God is in the book of Numbers. The severity of God was demonstrated when the fire of the Lord burned among the people. Numbers 11, 1 through 3. It was demonstrated when the Lord smote the people with the great plague. In Numbers 11, 33 and 34. Again, it was demonstrated when Miriam became leprous. Chapter 12, 9 to 15. Who was Miriam? When the spies brought back an evil report. The severity of God was demonstrated. Numbers 14, 29, 22 to 39. God decided that all those from 20 years old and upward would not be allowed to enter into the land, save Joshua and Caleb. A lot of funerals, a lot of carcasses in the wilderness, a lot of graves because of God's severity. His severity is seen again, Numbers 15, 32 to 36, when a man was stoned for violating the Sabbath. What was he doing? Picking up sticks. What's wrong? Picking up sticks on Saturday. Violated the Sabbath. Supposed to rest, right? Day of rest. Remember Korah led that rebellion against Moses? God's severity is demonstrated. What happened there, John? There's some new thing. The earth opened up, and down they went. 14,700 died in a plague the next day. That showed God's severity, didn't it? When Moses and Aaron were not allowed to enter the promised land, that showed God's severity. Numbers 20, 27. Remember the fiery serpents? When the Lord sent fiery serpents, like snakes? It's a snake story. Numbers 21, that showed God's severity. They bit the people. Much of the people of Israel died from snake bite. It came on as a result of their complaining. And then the severity of God demonstrated Numbers 25 when Israel joined unto Baal Peor. So the book of Numbers reminds us not to complain. And God is what? Strict. God is stern. God is severe. And if we just learn that, we learn a lot. Our time will be well spent. Let's think about events along the way from Sinai to Moab. We talked about some things while they were at Sinai. They're departing. They're going to Moab. And the book of Numbers details a lot of things that happened along the way. Numbers 11, people lust for flesh. We talked about how this is a record of their complaining, when their complaining began, how it displeased the Lord. And verse 4 says, they fell a lusting. Who shall give us flesh to eat? The psalmist reaches back to this era in Psalm 78, 26 beginning, when he said, he caused an east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his power he brought in the south wind. He rained flesh also upon them as dust, and feathered fowl like the sand of the sea. He let it fall in the midst of their camp round about their habitation, so they did eat and were well filled, for he gave them their own desire. They were not estranged from their lust. While their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still and believed not for his wondrous works. As well, he talks about this in Psalm 106, 14 and 15, where it is said, but lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tempted God in the desert. And he gave them their request and sent leanness into their soul. It's also at this point in Numbers 11 where how many men of the elders of Israel are appointed? 70. For what purpose? To bear the burden with Moses. He said in verse 14, I'm not able to bear all this people alone because it is too heavy for me. And the Lord said, they shall bear the burden of the people with thee. In verse 17. And notice in verse 23, that great question the Lord asked Moses. What was that? Is the Lord's, Jason, hand waxed short? Great questions God asked men. That's one of them. Is the Lord's hand waxed short? And here's quite a statement. Verse 31, there went forth a wind from the Lord and brought quail from the sea and let them fall by the camp as it were a day's journey on this side and as it were a day's journey on the other side round about the camp. And as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. Some sight. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Can the Lord furnish a table in the desert? He did. Chapter 12 records the opposition of Miriam and Aaron. They spake against Moses because the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. They said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? And in that section, you have the description that the Lord gave of Moses' character. What two things the Lord say about him? He was what? Charles? Meek and faithful. Would the Lord say that about you? It's written in verse 3, the man Moses was very meek above all the men which are upon the face of the earth. Who is the meekest man to live? The answer to that would be Moses, wouldn't it? And then in verse 7, my servant Moses is not so who is faithful in all mine house. What a compliment. Meek and faithful. Characteristics that we need to possess. Chapters 13 and 14 relate the spy story. It's very familiar. How many spies were sent to search the land of Canaan? 12. How many days? 40 days. What'd they bring back? Two things. They brought back fruit and word. Fruit and word, basically. Right? The fruit consisted of grapes and pomegranates and figs. They said in verse 27, this is the fruit of it. This is the fruit. So they brought back fruit. And then verse 26 says, brought back word. Brought back word. But their word was divided. 10 of them said, can't do it. They brought back an evil report. 2 of them, we are well able. Let's go up at once. Caleb and Joshua. Caleb stilled the people. Let us go up at once and possess it, for we're well able to overcome it. What came as a result of that? Of that report? Eric? Okay. A lot of things happened as a result of that. You know what they wanted to do with Caleb and Joshua? What they want to do with him, Nicholas? Stone them. What were they doing? What were they saying? All they were saying is, if the Lord delighted in us, what? We can go in and possess the land. Right? Let's go up at once and possess it. And the congregation wanted to stone them. So it brought that. And then, what else happened? It caused people to murmur, to complain. Caused people, it brought discouragement. People got discouraged. And it caused people to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until their carcasses would fall in the wilderness. They were overthrown. Paul said, with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Overthrown. So it resulted in people being overthrown. A lot of deaths because of all that. A lot of things happen as a result of the word that was brought back by those spies. That's exactly right. And that's what they did. Numbers 14, 40 through 45 is a reminder that we can only go forward as the Lord is with us. When they tried to go up without the Lord, and it didn't work. It didn't bode well for them, did it? In fact, they were warned, go not up, the Lord is not among you. Because they are turned away from the Lord. The Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up. It's a good example of presumption. What presumption is? Presuming. And they were discomfited. You can only go forward and succeed when you've got the Lord with you. Chapter 15 records instructions concerning offerings. And it was in this setting that we encountered a stick gatherer. Remember, he was gathering sticks on the Sabbath. What did they do with him? Stoned him with stones, verse 36, as the Lord commanded Moses. Imagine that. Stoned him with stones. That was the death penalty in violation of the Sabbath. What was significant about a ribbon of blue? Are you reading about a ribbon of blue? We need a ribbon of blue, baby. It's a ribbon of remembrance. Right, verse 29, he said, that you may look upon it and remember what? All the commandments of the Lord and do them. See that? Ribbon of blue. Make a good sermon. Good Bible study. We need to be reminded of our need to do all that the Lord commands us. Chapter 16, remember the gainsaying of Korah? They led a rebellion against Moses and Aaron. We use that word gainsaying because that's what it was. That's what Jude 11 calls it the gainsaying of Korah. That word gainsay suggests to speak against. Speak against. There have always been those that have spoken against God's leaders. Moses and Aaron had them. We have them today. Had them in the church. And there's some who sympathize with them. They want to speak against the elders. They want to speak against the preacher. They want to speak against other members. Instead of come and talk to the elders or come and talk to the preacher, come and talk to you, they'll go find some other member. They'll talk to you about them. Talk to you about the song leader. Talk to you about the elders. Talk to you about the preacher. Don't listen to the people like that. Don't sympathize with them. Don't be in sympathy with people like that. Lest you find yourself in the same category as those who said, you've killed the people of the Lord. And they died in a plague. Number 16. Gainsaying did not cease when Korah and those that were with him went down into the earth. There's still people like that around, unfortunately. In fact, one of the important works of elders is to be able to convince or to refute the gainsayer. So they're in the church. And that's one of the unpleasant part of serving as an elder, isn't it? And having to refute those who are gainsayers, who want to contradict and try to oppose the work of faithful men of God. Number 16 is a good place to learn about that, gainsaying. And how many was it that died in the plague beside them that died about the matter of Korah? 14,700. That's a lot of deaths, isn't it? More people died that were in sympathy with them. Think about that. Then the budding of Aaron's rod, chapter 17, which served a purpose. What purpose did it serve? It was a token to who? To the rebels. Remember that? A token against the rebels. In number 17, in verse 10, the Lord said to Moses, bring Aaron's rod again before the testimony to be kept for a token against the rebels. That's what those people were. Korah and his company and those that were in sympathy with them. They were rebels. They were rebelling. And that, he said, would quite take away their murmurings from me, that they die not. They die not. You got people today just like that. Action decisions made by elders. Some member will go to somebody, I don't agree with it. I disagree. I don't agree. What are they doing? They're gainsaying. They're contradicting. They're opposing. Don't be a party to that. But also, chapter 18 talks about the portion of the priest and the Levites. What do you learn from use of the word best in that chapter? Several times he said the best, the best, the best. What do you learn from that? God expects and deserves the best, doesn't he? He does. God deserves the best. What's he given to us? The best, hasn't he? He deserves the best. And Paul made use of that in 1 Corinthians 9. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. Verses 13 and 14. Chapter 19 tells about a red heifer involved the water of separation, purification for sin. That points to Christ. Hebrews 9, 13 and 14. Chapter 20, you have the death of Miriam. Remember the water out of the rock? Instead of speaking to the rock, what did Moses do? Struck the rock. The Lord said, because you believe me not to sanctify me, what's going to happen? Not going to enter into the land. So you had the sin and sentence of Moses and Aaron, and Edom refused Israel passage. Chapter 20, to the death of Aaron, verse 29. The congregation saw that Aaron was dead. chapter 21, you have the fiery serpents. And John 3 points out that is a type of Christ. The serpent of brass is a type of Christ. How that, as folks would look to the serpent on the pole to live, that we look to Christ on the cross for life. John 3, 14 and 15. Sihon and Og were smitten. Chapters 22 through 24 deal with Balak and Balaam. Remember that story? The talking donkey. Balaam is mentioned three times in the New Testament, 2 Peter 2:15, Jude 11, as well as Revelation 2 and verse 14. You need to be familiar with the story of Balaam. Israel joined unto Baal Peor, chapter 25. Here's an occasion where how many people died in a plague? 24,000 people, 24,000. Phinehas was zealous for his God, you remember? What a great example. In 25 and verse 8, when he went after the man of Israel and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. And so the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. But those that died in the plague were 24,000. It's amazing. 24,000 people died. Chapter 26, the second numbering. And what's significant about this numbering? What stands out, John? All right, verse 64 and 65. And this is quite a statement. Among these, there was not a man of them whom Moses and Aaron the priest numbered when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. And there was not left a man of them save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. I'd like to have been there. Can you imagine if it had been said, but those that were here at the first numbering, from 20 years old and upward among the males, would you please stand? And how many would stand? Two men would stand up. And who would they be? Joshua and Caleb. Makes quite a statement, doesn't it? And you know why that is. Not a man. Not a man. Chapter 27, the daughters of Zelophehad, the law of inheritances, how Joshua would succeed Moses. One of Moses' last concerns was that the Lord would set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, which may go in before them, which may lead them out, which may bring them in, that the congregation, Lord, be not a sheep which have no shepherd. There's more about Zelophehad's daughters in chapter 36. That's how the book ends. 28-29, offerings to be observed by the children of Israel. Chapter 30 concerns vows. Verse 2, if a man vow a vow unto the Lord, you remember what God said about vow making and vow keeping. Better to not vow than to vow and not pay, right? Keep your vows. Keep your word. Chapter 31, the Midianites and Balaam are slain. You've got purification, division of the prey, the Reubenites, Gadites sue for their inheritance. In chapter 32, one of the great questions there is in verse 6, shall your brethren go to war and shall ye sit here? Chapter 33 records the journeys of the Israelites. Verse 1 says, these are the journeys of the children of Israel. So you have the 2 and 40 journeys of the Israelites. Chapter 34, borders of the land of Canaan with the coast thereof, and the division of the land. And then chapter 35 talks about what? And the cities of refuge. How many cities of refuge? 6 cities of refuge where the slayer may flee thither, which killeth any person unawares. Chapter 35 and verse 11. And he was to stay there how long? Abide in it unto the death of the high priest. Verse 25. God has always put his blessings in a place. And his blessing of safety at that time was in the city of refuge. And today his blessing of safety is in Christ and the church. And we need to get in there and stay put. These things are written for our admonition, 1 Corinthians 10, 1 through 12. Remember, we can only go forward and succeed if what? If the Lord is with us. Hopefully this brief overview has been a little appetizer of sort that will whet your appetite to want to study deeper into these sections. A lot of good information written for our learning, written for our admonition. Appreciate you being with us tonight. Lord willing, Sunday morning, Acts 4, and next Wednesday, the book of Deuteronomy.